Hello, neighbors. This is Kevin McLeod from Plainfield, New Jersey. Owners at Boardwalk, Saratoga Springs, Animal Kingdom Lodge, and Wilderness Lodge. And you're listening to My DVC Points.
Parents and the children could have fun together.
Please board quickly and safely. Our monorail will be departing momentarily.
Welcome to the My DVC Points podcast. Join the conversation as DVC members share their stories, personal preferences, and magical memories. Your reservation is confirmed. Your fast passes are booked. Pull up on the yellow strap because our journey into the magic of membership is about to begin.
To infinity and beyond.
Now, here's your host and curator of magical stories, Chad Pennycuff.
Welcome home, neighbors, to episode 32 of the My DVC Points podcast. Today we have a very cool interview for you. It is a member insider interview and an industry insider. We're talking with Tim, the owner at DVCnews.com. If you've ever read any news article on Facebook, chances are that Tim and his team are the ones who put that information together and published the original article. Tim and his team are such an incredible blessing to the DVC community as a whole. I'd like to thank our two sponsors for today's show, DVCResaleMarket.com, the industry leader in DVC resales, and Debbie from Vacation Club Loans. If you're in the market for a new contract, DVC Resale Market is sure to have it. If you need financing for that contract, Debbie from Vacation Club Loans will take care of you and get you all squared away. It's been about a month since my interview with Debbie first aired, and I keep hearing wonderful reports back from Debbie about people calling up to refinance and save money on their existing loans. That's just a win-win for everybody. So glad I can partner with her and partner with Nick and help bring you more content on a regular basis. Well, I would like to welcome to the show today, Tim from DVC News. How are you doing today, Tim?
Good. How are you?
Tell me a little bit about your home resorts and how long you've been a DVC member.
Oh, let's see. We bought our first points at Saratoga Springs in, 2003. And it was pretty early after points went on sale at that resort. Saratoga Springs sometimes feels like the redheaded stepchild of DVC, but it was the design and the feel of it just really impressed me at the time. And that was a period of time where they were, DVC was, I think they'd sold out of Beach Club really quick. I don't think they had any Beach Club points, but maybe they were still on Boardwalk and maybe even like Vero Beach back then.
So was it the early stages of Saratoga, right?
It was. We paid $79 a point, brand new from Disney, for 50 years. That was a point in time where Saratoga Springs was the first resort that got the later ending date. Because until then, every other resort had stuck with that 2042 end date.
Oh, yeah.
On the contract. So, like, if you bought into the Beach Club, which I think was for sale around 2001, you only got, 41 or 42 years worth of ownership because they kept sticking with that January 31st, 2042 end date. And Saratoga Springs was the first one that extended that out and we got the full 50 years. So that was kind of a bragging rights thing at the time.
Yeah, no kidding. I mean, now we all kind of we're used to it, right? We're used to it.
Right. We take it for granted now.
Yeah.
We bought some Saratoga points. We had, at the time we bought, my son was 2 years old, and we had a daughter who was 6 months old. My wife and I had both been to Disney World a couple of times. We spent part of our honeymoon there in 97. Funny story that she tells, which I don't necessarily remember, but I guess I'll give her the benefit of the doubt and say that this is true. We stayed at Port Orleans French Quarter when we were there for our honeymoon. And if you're, familiar with the lay of the land, the buses for Port Orleans typically drive right past Old Key West.
Oh, yeah.
I'm blanking on the name of the road there, but got that tower structure that sits on the corner there with the Disney Vacation Club banners on it and all that right on the outskirts of Old Key West that you can see from the road. And supposedly, as we drove by this one day, my wife made a comment about looking into it or joining DVC or whatever. And my response was something along the lines of, yeah, maybe when we make our first million, we'll do that. It didn't quite take that long for us to buy our first points.
Yeah, well, that's a good thing, man, because I don't know about you. I might be waiting on that one.
Yeah, right. we bought the Saratoga points in 2003, and then we bought some Boardwalk points. I couldn't tell you exactly when that was. That's always a resort that we really liked, and the presence of those standard rooms make it sort of an economical place to stay. Nice to be able to book that 11 months out.
Oh, yeah. Those Boardwalk rooms, everybody talks about the Animal Kingdom values. Those rooms are a value, sure. value. Given the location, the points on it, and from what I gather, you pretty much have to book those at the 11-month mark.
The standard rooms, yeah, that seems to be the case. We got lucky a couple of times when the kids were younger and we could travel more in the off-season. And when I say off-season, I mean like even dates that are still off-season, like early May and early February. And a few times we were able to use our Saratoga points to book some rooms at the Boardwalk, even those standard views, but it was usually like one bedrooms. And it's not something where you're going to get a standard view studio frequently at 7 months in October.
Yeah, something. You can forget that one. That one's not going to happen. So has that been the only add-on itis that's hit, was the one Boardwalk add-on?
We bought some points at the Grand Californian when that one was originally for sale. We had some friends living in California, and even before those points went on sale, we had gone out there once or twice and spent some time with them. They were Disneyland fans as well, living about an hour and a half or so from Disneyland. So we would get hotel rooms and spend a few days with them there. And they bought some Grand California points. We bought some, and we had a great run of vacations together as families. They had two kids, we had two kids, and we would share a two-bedroom villa. It was a great experience. We did that for probably 5-6 years, something along those lines, at a minimum. And then they up and relocated on us. So they actually moved to Florida, these friends of ours, not just because of that, but because of other, you know, my kids getting older and getting involved in activities at school and all that, it became more difficult for us to go out there. So we actually sold our Grand Californian points a few years ago, and I assume you're familiar enough with the resale market to know we did pretty well on that, as it turned out.
Oh, gosh, yes. Yeah, I bought some about 2 years ago. So, and even what I bought them at, they're still up $40, $50 a point. It's insane.
That is probably, spoiler alert, the Grand Californian is, if I had to name a favorite resort throughout the entire program, that's probably it. That's just an amazing resort, and I really miss the fact that we aren't able to take those trips anymore. But
do you regret it? Do you wish you still had them, or?
Not to the point of being sentimental and crying in my soup about it or anything like that. I'll always cherish the trips that we spent there. And again, it's a gorgeous resort. The location can't be beat, walking in that back gate to California Adventure. There was one day where we got fast passes for the water ride at California Adventure. Is it Grizzly River Run or something like that?
Yep.
We got the old paper fast passes for it, but the return time was like 3 hours away or something like that. So we got the fast passes, went back to our hotel room, changed into swimsuits, spent like 2 hours at the hotel pool, and when our fast pass time came up, we just grabbed our cover up and shoes and walked right into the park and went on the ride and then came back. You can't do that at Disney World. I mean, I don't care where you're staying. There's just nothing that compares to going from your hotel pool to a theme park attraction in literally like 3 minutes.
And popping right back. Yeah. I mean, I thought I did well last time to have fast passes for it, go upstairs, take a nap, pop down and go do the ride, and then pop back up to the room in 2 minutes, put dry clothes on, and then go back and hit the parks.
Yeah, okay? Either or, yeah.
But to do it pool, ride, pool, I'm not worthy, man. I'm not worthy. That's a killer story.
To answer your question, again, it was a great run of staying at that resort. I'm sure we'll be back. I hadn't been to Disneyland in 6 years, and my wife and I just made it there literally a week ago today. I was in California on a business trip, and my wife came with me, and we went and spent a few hours at Disneyland. So that was the first time we'd been there in so long. And it was pretty fun to be able to see everything again and go on a couple of the new rides that we hadn't experienced yet.
Perfect. Now, have you sold anything else, or is it just the one Grand Cal that got sold?
No, just the one. We still have all our Saratoga and Boardwalk.
Yeah, there's something to be said for economies of scale. Because I know you're on the East Coast side of the world with me, and And we can get dirt cheap tickets down to Orlando, but getting tickets over to Disneyland? Not quite so economical. And then there's no Magical Express over there.
Right.
And your annual pass for Disney World doesn't work at Disneyland. So right. You got to buy tickets again. And it's an expensive trip. Let's not confuse anybody. But that sure. being said and done, it is off the charts cool over there.
Yeah, I think the last few times we were able to go, we made a conscious effort to kind of branch out while we were in Southern California in that area. The one time we flew into Las Vegas, sort of did the Hoover Dam and spent a day and drove up to the Grand Canyon and some of that stuff before we went on to Anaheim. Another time we went to San Diego and spent a couple days there, went to a Padres game and saw the big aircraft carrier out there. It is a much more complicated journey from this part of the country with the jet lag and time changes and all that. It's fun to kind of get your money.
Oh, yeah. Don't get me wrong. I think it should be on every member's bucket list to get out there. But speaking of that, now, have you made it to Aulani or any of the beach resorts?
Not Aulani, but we've been to both Vero and Hilton Head.
So if Grand Cal ranks as your favorite, what comes in behind that?
You know, I really enjoy all of the resorts that we own. I'll probably put Boardwalk as the second favorite. Just being able to be in the thick of things. So close to Epcot, the walk to Hollywood Studios, just the nightlife around there. That's just always been an area that really, that sort of, I'm doing air quotes here, that sort of Disney is being in that environment, just kind of standing there and looking out over, I think they call it Crescent Lake, and having the boats coming by and the beach club across the way. That's, you know, I know there's people who love the Polynesian and some of the Magic Kingdom area resorts, but that Epcot area was always our family's favorite.
Yeah, I'm hoping it stays that way with the gondolas sure. coming in there, right? I really, truly am, because that is kind of a magical area. And it always seems so DVC special sure. to me, because you've got Boardwalk over there and then Beach Club and then high-end resorts. I hope it stays that yeah. way. We'll find out. We'll probably know by spring. Now, when you guys stayed, are you typically a studio, a one-bedroom, two-bedroom kind of family?
More often than not, we're in larger rooms. Studios are pretty rare for our family of four. If just my wife and I are taking a trip, we'll get by in a studio. But when the kids are with us, we're usually either in a one-bedroom or, again, if we're traveling with extended family or meeting some friends or something like that, we might share a two-bedroom. Never stayed in a grand villa. Have to put that on my bucket list.
Yeah, I'm about a week from that one.
Really?
My next trip home is a couple nights at a grand villa. Those things just look off the charts cool.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, no doubt.
You mentioned you've been to Disney a few times before you bought in. Was this your first timeshare level experience, or how did that factor play in?
We actually rented points for two stays before we bought our points. When I said we bought in 2003, our first trip was in 2002 when my son was about 18 months old. There again, we went with, it was my wife, my son, and I, and my parents. So there were five of us. Looking at options, we ended up renting points for a two-bedroom villa at Old Key West.
Very nice.
So that was September of 2002. I don't remember exactly how we talked ourselves into this. I know it had something to do with my wife being pregnant and probably me saying, well, if we don't go now, it's going to be a while before we'll really have a chance to come back again. So again, I don't remember the circumstances, but long story short, we went in September of 02, and then suddenly in January of 03, we found ourselves going back again and renting points a second time. This time it was just, I think it was the three of us plus a friend, and we stayed in a, pretty sure we just stayed in a one bedroom. Yeah. You know, two trips on rented points in about 5 months' time.
Well, it sounds like the rented points there was your gateway into this. You kind of saw
yeah.
how awesome this was.
Right.
And I mean, we can look back now in 2019 when we're recording this and go $79 a point for Saratoga, but all 50 years deal. I think it worked out well for you, seeing that you could sell that contract today for more than what you paid for it and have stayed, what, 16, 17 years
yeah,
for the cost absolutely. Of dues. Yeah, that is just smoking. To be honest with you, that's the level of study and analysis that I did when I started looking at stories like yours that made me kind of get over the hump of, wait a minute, I'm paying all this money for this timeshare and in 50 years I give it back.
Yeah, I'm sure I could click around on my computer and find a few spreadsheets and documents that I used to when making the decision with my wife way back when. I have a vague recollection of doing a spreadsheet where I compared projected rental rates over the next, you know, like 20 or 30 years versus how we would make out if we bought points. But again, yeah, like you said, I think we all made out pretty well, given, particularly given how those prices were back then.
Oh, yeah. And where they're at today? Yeah. Yeah, that one came out smelling like a rose. So now, at the time, did you look at resale at all, or did you just only consider direct?
We really didn't look at resale because the extra years on the contract kind of made Saratoga Springs a no-brainer. You know, to kind of put things in perspective, this was a time when Saratoga Springs wasn't nearly as big as it is now. When we bought, and I still have the brochure around here somewhere, only a small portion of the resort was confirmed as actually being built. And I know a lot of that's sort of the timeshare disclaimers and footnotes and all that. The first four buildings that went up were the four in Congress Park, right along Disney Springs, downtown Disney. So those were the first four buildings to go up. And then I'm trying to remember the ones in the Springs and the Paddock, I think, under construction. And they were pretty much confirmed. I think it was the first 12 buildings that were originally announced and part of the plan. And it was only several years later that they expanded it further and I think added six more buildings, the ones in the Grandstand and Carousel, I believe.
Yeah, and then the treehouses got converted over to DVC as well.
Which we've stayed at twice as well, and those are pretty nice accommodations. I guess that's the closest we've come to a grand villa, is a treehouse.
Well, they are technically three bedrooms.
That's right.
Is there any place else that you haven't stayed? We know you haven't stayed in grand villas, and we know Alani has been off the list. Is there any of the Walt Disney resorts you haven't made it to in the 16 years of ownership?
We have not stayed at the Wilderness Lodge at either Boulder Ridge or Copper Creek.
You're missing out, man. You're missing out.
Yeah. It's not out of any malice or dislike or anything like that. It's just sort of a place that we haven't quite gotten to yet. The year that Copper Creek opened, whatever year it opened, we were there up until just a few days before it opened, like a week before it opened. And as it turned out, this was again a trip with friends. We were at either Bay Lake Tower or Grand Floridian for a week. And then we ended up having to extend our trip by one day because of flight arrangements or whatever. You know, it's cheaper to fly out on a Monday or something like that. So our family booked one night at the Polynesian and then flew out the next day, just in a studio, obviously. And that was like a week before Copper Creek opened. And I would have loved to have, if we nailed that date, been one of the first to stay at Copper Creek, or if they'd opened it a couple weeks earlier than they did. We were in that same vein. I said we stayed at the treehouses once. The first time we stayed there was a week after the treehouses opened.
Oh, that's really cool.
So it was in pretty good shape then.
I've stayed there recently and they're still in good shape. And I don't think they're that far from a refurb. They should be coming up on those here pretty soon.
Yeah, Saratoga's supposed to be getting it this year, I believe.
Yeah, have you ever done anything with concierge collections, cruise lines, or RCI?
Not with points, no. We've done three cruises over the years, Disney cruises. All of them were just three-night cruises. In fact, one of them was a promotional cruise we got from buying our Grand Californian points. They had a deal
really
where
cool.
you bought 100 points or more and you got a free three-night cruise.
I remember, well, I've been told by some of the people I know that are guides there that when Grand Cal was first being sold, they had a hard time selling it because nobody in Disneyland area really knew what DVC was or really wasn't all that up on it.
I believe that's true.
And now it's like the darling gem of DVC that everybody wants in but can't get there.
Right. That kind of overlapped with the economy not being in so great shape there around 2008, 2009. DVC somehow kind of overextended itself. I think if you look back, they had at least four, maybe even five resorts available in that same time frame. It's like Bay Lake Tower was still going. Animal Kingdom was still going. Bay Lake Tower had started. Animal Kingdom was still going. Saratoga was still going. And then you had Grand Californian, and there might have even been another one that came in there at some point. But that was an interesting time for DVC, not to...
Oh, I can imagine, because that was 2008, 2009. That was a serious downturn in the economy.
Right. If you think about the time frame again, there was no Polynesian DVC then. There was no Grand Floridian. Bay Lake Tower was the first Magic Kingdom area DVC. You know, the first Seven Seas Lagoon.
Monorail Resort.
Yeah. Right. Monorail Resort. Thank you. That was something that members in DVC itself had been waiting years and years to make happen. And literally just a few weeks before those points were going on sale was when the markets went into the crapper.
Yeah, well, that starts to make sense there. That really starts to make sense. So have you attended a Moonlight Magic party or used any of the membership extras?
We have been to the Moonlight Magic at Typhoon Lagoon two or three times, I think, that it happened to coincide with our trips. And I always thought that they were great events. I really enjoyed it. Just the idea of being in Typhoon. You know, I'm not a huge water park guy. My family likes it better than I do, my wife and both kids. But, you know, just the sort of cachet of being in Typhoon Lagoon after dark, and that experience is sort of a neat thing.
Oh, that would be, because I think they close pretty early, right?
Yeah, I think normally they close 5 or 6 p.m. even in the summer. Although, you know, Disney being Disney, they're branching out more and more with nighttime parties and all those sorts of things now. But yeah, I mean, when that event first started happening 3 or 4 years ago, they were very unique. You know, those were fun experiences. And I'm not going to say that the crowds were incredibly sparse. You know, we still had waits for things. And that's understandable, because we all know there's a lot of demand from members to get into these Moonlight Magic events. So
yeah, those things are kind of a catch-22 for DVC. Because if they don't put enough tickets out there, everybody complains that they can't get in. And then if they put too many tickets out there, everybody complains about, well, this was supposed to be a limited ticket event and the wait lines are atrocious.
Absolutely. Right.
So that's it's kind of like a no win. They're going to make somebody mad at any time. So, I mean, I just go and go, look, I have an annual pass. I'm coming in here for the character meets and the rare opportunities and to just kick back and have fun. I think if you take Moonlight Magics with that event, just be glad you made it in and have fun. Any other membership extras that you've taken in along the way? The feedback that I get from listeners all the time is do more membership magic reviews. Tell us about those benefits and perks that are exclusive to us as DVC members.
I don't think we've ever done any of the meals that they offer. Not anything unique to DVC that comes to mind.
Do you guys use the kitchen then when you're in one bedrooms, or do you dine out? Or
no, we get our money's worth out of the kitchen. Not that we don't dine out. If anything, we maybe plan one meal out per day on average. But breakfast in the villa is kind of a no-brainer, whether you're just up for cereal or eggs or frozen waffles or whatever. All of that is just so easy to make, you know. And you can't have four people in the bathroom at once anyway. So,
yeah, that's true. And like you said, it is a really good value. Compared to, you go down to the quick service and you're going to drop 12, 13 bucks a person.
So we do that. And, you know, we usually get, at this point, we've almost got a routine, you know, things like spaghetti are simple to make in the room, tacos. We've used the grills at resorts many times. We've had everything from grilled chicken to steaks to hamburgers and all those sorts of things. More often than not, it's cold cuts and mac and cheese and some of that kind of stuff. Like I said, we probably eat on average, I'd say one meal out in the parks or at the resorts per day. And the other two, we'll end up having something in the room.
Yeah. That's the compromise in my family. I look at it and go, man, I can get your cooking anywhere and my cooking anywhere. Okay. I mean, that's always with us. This Disney meals is only while we're here. So I want at least one meal a day out. That's right. Kind of my deal. Everything else, fine. Right. We'll save some cash. We'll do breakfast in the villa. We'll go get groceries, have some delivered, something along those lines. But that's kind of it.
And I've never been a dining plan guy. We have never done the dining plan at all. but particularly lately, it seems like DVC has a decent number of discounts at restaurants. Last time I went and looked at the website, there were 80 to 100 locations where you could get some savings. 10% is 10%.
Yeah, I mean, it adds up.
Right. And I know last summer when we were there, we got discounts at Beaches and Cream, one of the most popular places in all of Walt Disney World to eat, giving you 10% off. So I'll take it.
And hardest to book.
Okay. Right, exactly.
Good Lord. I think that popularity has more to do with its size than it does the quality of the food. But although I'm not going to deny that kitchen sink. Okay.
No, I think you're exactly right there. I mean, the food's nothing to write home about. That's all about the atmosphere. And
yeah. And according to my friend Chris Malik, I've got to go try the No Way Jose. So that's on my bucket list there. Beaches and Cream, we're coming at you for that one. Here's a really fun question that I ask. Quite often I forget to ask this question, but if Tinkerbell were to come along and spread some pixie dust on your DVC account and 2,000 one-time use points appeared that you could book anything or use anything in the DVC catalog for, how would you end up using those points?
I would probably fly out to California, use half of them there at the Grand Californian, and then fly out to Aulani and use the other half there. How's that?
Hey, that works for me. I think for 2,000 points, you could get 3 weeks out of that.
Oh, yeah.
Depending on what room size.
We haven't been to Aulani yet, but it's a location my wife talks about. Unfortunately, my wife also isn't a huge fan of air travel, so I have to remind her that those flights are a little bit longer than, say, Ohio to Florida.
Yeah, well, you could convince her like this. Take the 5-hour flight over to L.A., okay? You go play in Disneyland, and then you just take another 5-hour flight over to the island.
And that's probably about what it would be.
Yeah, that's my plan, at least. Really cool on there. Let me move into some rapid-fire questions, and I kind of like these as well. They're kind of fun. Dole Whip or Mickey Bar?
Mickey Bar.
Churro or Mickey Pretzel?
Oh, if I just had a Mickey bar, I'll go with Mickey Pretzel. I gotta watch my waist.
Poncho or umbrella?
Umbrella.
Do you wear ears or rock a t-shirt?
I do a t-shirt.
Favorite park?
I'll go with Epcot.
Favorite land?
Tomorrowland.
Favorite attraction?
Rock and roller coaster.
Drive or fly?
Fly, please.
Best place on property to relax and enjoy a drink or a dessert?
I'd probably sit right on the boardwalk.
Okay. Right outside or?
Yep. Right outside ESPN Club. What's the ice cream place?
Ample Hills. Now, would that be at nighttime or daytime or?
It's more likely to be at nighttime.
Yeah, you can't beat the nightlife out there, especially when the street entertainers come out.
Sure.
Always a bunch of fun. Do you have any favorite Disney memories or stories that are kind of unique to you and your family?
My wife and I, when we were there on our honeymoon, we did you remember the backlot tour at Hollywood Studios? They used to, for the benefit of those who don't remember it intimately, the first scene was, what was it, kind of a recreation of a sea attack. There was one person who was sort of down in the engine room and other people who were out on a ship sort of acting out scenes that they would then splice in with the video. I was the guy down in the engine room, and my wife was out the captain of the ship or whatever it was, and I think one of the cast members made a joke about how it was like our first fight as a married couple or something, because she was the one who sunk the ship, and I was the one who had the big bucket of water dumped on him when the missile supposedly hits the torpedo hits the side of the ship. And there's no video or photographs to prove that it ever happened.
I don't know if that's a good thing. Any advice to new members or prospective members listening to the show?
Maybe this is a no-brainer, but I think that the smart thing is to buy points with the park destinations, with those core destinations in mind. Don't buy points to use them for cruises or Adventures by Disney or any of that kind of stuff. You know, you hear about some people who sort of pacify a spouse with those options. I don't know that that's necessarily the most sound logic to use in buying. You know, try to have a realistic objective for how often you're going to want to visit Walt Disney World, Disneyland, Aulani, Hilton Head and Vero and use that as the basis for what you're buying.
Oh, absolutely. The best use of DVC points is always staying at a DVC resort. Yeah, by far.
To a new member, I think my best advice would be visit the other resorts. You know, don't get locked into one. I know everybody has their favorites. You never know what surprises you're going to find as you go along. One resort we haven't talked about is the Grand Floridian, and that wasn't a resort that I ever really considered buying or had ever considered staying at or anything like that. But just sort of on a fluke, my wife and I ended up spending a couple nights there in a studio on a quick getaway, and we loved it. I mean, it was pretty amazing, and ended up a year later booking a two-bedroom with some friends and staying there for a week, and it was a pretty amazing trip. You know, for somebody who enjoys the Epcot area so much and that the boardwalk and the beach club area, it was a different type of trip. It was a great experience. It was something new and different in ways that we hadn't really imagined it would be. You know, and having stayed at Hilton Head and Vero and some of those other places, you know, there's always something different there. That would be my advice to a new member would be, you know, get out. You've got 50 years to enjoy your points. You know, don't hesitate to try different things.
Oh, absolutely. One of the things I love most about DVC is the variety that we have, even in Orlando, between the tree houses, the cabins, the bungalows, the high end over at Grand Flow, over to point stretching over at some of the value rooms, or just standard rooms at Animal Kingdom, or standard views at Saratoga or Old Key West. There's some really good point values out there, all things said and done, and you've got a variety of choices available to you. Now I want to kind of pivot in and find out a little bit about backstory here, because, well, we all love backstory. I mean, between Michael Eisner and his leadership years of Everything Has a Backstory, Disney Vacation Club people are, I guess all Disney fans are just kind of trained like Pavlov's dog to look for a backstory behind everything. Tell me a little bit about DVC News and how that got started.
The one person I usually credit it with, even though I didn't meet her till years after, is Deb Wills from All Ears. As a member, you know, and I hung out at different websites and forums, and the one thing that didn't exist was this sort of information archive that you could really go to and find things. That was kind of the niche that I thought needed to be filled. The news element of it sits on the forefront. You know, it's easiest to sort of keep up with whatever's happening day to day. And there's many sources for the information that gets posted there. You know, some of it may originate with discussions on message boards and things like that. Some of it is information that DVC itself publishes either on the member website or on Facebook or the Disney Parks blog or whatever.
Yeah, and some of it's original research as well.
Sure, right. And it's, you know, I've never been hesitant about linking to other people's stories. I want it to be this one-stop shop for people who don't have time to look at all these different websites on their own and follow the message boards and the social media and all that kind of stuff. So, you know, whether people stop in and look at the DVC News homepage on a daily basis or follow me on social media or get the newsletter or whatever, it's just a collection of stories that kind of helps keep them up to date on what's happening.
Yeah, it's a great resource for keeping up to date on news stories, events. And the other thing I'm going to say is what I most appreciate about your site is it's pretty legitimate stuff. There's like no rumors that are just so far off. Everything is pretty well vetted. I know if you post the news, it's sound and it's really news.
Yeah, that's always been a conscious effort on my part. You know, I know there are people who love to delve into the rumors and news and those sorts of things. There are websites that you can go to that have insiders who hang out with a proven track record who will tell you this is going to happen 2 months from now. It hasn't been announced yet and that sort of thing. And I think part of the difficulty with that is things change. Even if these people are, you know, Imagineers themselves or employees of Disney or whatever, I'm not trying to besmirch their credentials in any way, shape, or form. But from the time somebody posts something and says, here's all the great new things that are going to come to Epcot in the next 4 years. you know, that's great information and we all kind of drool over that and have fun with it and whatever. But if you've been around the block a few times, you know that over the period of 3 or 4 years, 50% of that's going to change.
And even their official news does. We were kind of anticipating Mickey and Minnie's Runaway Railroad would be done this fall. And Disney Parks blog comes in and posts an article saying, hey, it's going to be delayed.
Sure. That kind of stuff is going to happen. But when it comes to the sort of off the wall rumors and things, I do try to wait until some sort of critical mass has been reached. And it's 95% my judgment call on that. Perhaps talking to a few confidants and some of my own sources with really mentioning those things. But, you know, even when I do mention something that's a little off the wall, I try to make that real clear that so-and-so says this might happen. I'm not necessarily convinced, but have fun with it.
All I can tell you is I appreciate it. And it's one of the main news sources that I do tune into every single day. And I'm not a news and rumors guy. You can tell that from my show. I'm a stories guy. I like to hear stories. I like to figure out why things happened and what's the history of them. And it sounds like you took a little bit of inspiration from Deb Willis over at All Ears. From everything that I haven't met her yet, I've emailed her a couple times, but she seems like an incredibly nice person as well.
Oh, she is. Yeah. Yeah, I met her a few times and she has always been a great asset to the Disney community. You know, she'll stop and chat with somebody and at any time. One of the times I ran into her was when I was at the D23 Expo out in California. She was hustling between sessions and what had undoubtedly already been a 12 plus hour day or something like that. And we stopped and chatted just for a couple of minutes. But yeah, she's always been really great.
Anything else about DVC news histories or services or some of the most hit sites or most popular areas of your site over there?
I think most people are into sort of the breaking news type stuff. You know, these stories that really come out of nowhere. You know, DVC announces a new resort or, oh, we're going to change your perks and we're going to change this, we're going to change that. You know, those obviously attract the most attention from people. One of the more challenging parts of the resort is, aside from the news, there's this whole underlying layer of information about all the resorts. You know, I've got photographs from the resort grounds to room interiors, and, you know, there are lists on there of what comes equipped in a room and those sorts of things. You know, that kind of stuff is sometimes a little bit tough to keep on top of with Disney changing things and rooms getting refurbished and those sorts of things. But in general, I hope that it's still a useful resource for people, even if the paint color of your beach club room is, you know, the walls are a little bit different color than what's in the photographs. At least
yeah,
getting a sense of
the room layout, what it's about.
Right, exactly. You know, the appliances don't change a whole lot, you know, the sleeping accommodations and some of that kind of stuff. So
yeah, the general square footage and layout of the room, that's pretty well hard. You know, they don't move walls when they do a refurb. Yeah, you can always count on getting a good feel for the room that way. I'm obviously a huge fan of DVCnews.com, and I do follow it quite regularly. It's in my feed. I'm on the newsletter, I see the emails pop in once a day. But how can listeners get engaged with you if they wanted to follow you as well?
We have accounts on both Twitter and Facebook. On both, it's facebook.com/DVC News. The Twitter account is at DVC News. Every story that's published to the site, all the news stories get linked to those accounts within minutes. You know, if you use either one of those apps, you can get really quick alerts when new information is published. We also have an email newsletter. There's a link near the top of the homepage to subscribe to the newsletter. There's a weekly version, which comes out every Monday, and there's a daily version as well, if you want to receive one. Daily version was something that I kind of resisted doing for a while because I didn't want to be perceived as mail bombing people, but every once in a while, weekly newsletter starts to kick off Monday morning, and then something would happen invariably a couple times a year. Something would happen Monday afternoon or early Tuesday, and it was time sensitive for that week, and it'd get kicked to the following week's newsletter when it wasn't valid anymore. You know, registering for some event or a limited time piece of merchandise that went on sale like Thursday or something. So every time that happened, I'd get a couple of people coming at me and saying, gee, thanks for the notice when it's too late and I can't use it anymore. So long story short, I caved and I added a daily version of the newsletter as well. If you want those messages on a daily basis, you know, it only sends something when there's been a new posting within the last 24 hours.
I get both. I get the daily one, and there are days when I see a new article or something pop up because I'm always looking at it because I know people in the My DVC Points community group on Facebook could be asking about it or something along those lines. So I feel like I should just try to keep up to date, even though I'm not a news and rumors hound. But to me, it's just like, hey, man, I have a pretty significant investment here, so I want to know what's going on with it. And I think it's a great resource.
When I first started the website, you know, I was kind of bouncing ideas off a friend of mine. And do you really think there's going to be enough information to do this? You know, is it going to look like an abandoned website or something? He's kind of like, and he's a member too, and he's thinking to himself. He says, yeah, I think you'll have enough information to publish one or two stories a week or something like that. So we still kind of laugh at that now because a slow week is like four or five stories. Some weeks it feels like there's like eight or ten of them. It depends on what Disney's up to on any given week.
Yeah, it really does, because it seems like sometimes they're just out there stirring the pot. Like January was just insane.
And there's some days, you know, I'm fortunate enough to work from home, so my schedule's a little flexible with my quote-unquote day job. But there's some days where I'm sitting here trying desperately to turn some bit of news into a coherent-sounding story. And I'm just thinking to myself, Disney, why are you doing this to me? Why did you have to do this today? Couldn't you wait until tomorrow to tell us how many villas there are at Riviera or something like that? I don't know. But oh, well, it's all for a good cause.
Yeah, well, I know I sure appreciate it, and I know the listeners will benefit as well.
That's the goal. You know, if nothing else, I'll take that hit. I'll do what I can to keep people informed and hopefully help some people enjoy their membership a little bit better and organize their thoughts and figure out if it's a good decision for their family or not.
Yeah, and I think as a Disney and DVC content creator myself, that's really what I shoot for as well. I'm hoping to entertain people, make their daily commute a little bit better, and share some member stories and some member magic with them. To the extent that I can do that, I consider it a success.
Absolutely. I agree. 100%.
Well, I want to thank you for being on the show today, Tim.
Well, thank you. It's been great. This was fun.
Okay. And I will look forward to my next daily email newsletter. Have a great one.
Take care.
I just got back from a trip home to Walt Disney World, where I got to go to the Star Wars Galaxy's Edge preview. Incredible land, incredible fun time. Got to meet a bunch of people from the My DVC Points community and was so thankful to do that. And I'm looking forward to September 22nd. My DVC Points will be sponsoring a booth at the Disney Indie Meetup in Indianapolis, September 22nd. We'd love for you to come out and meet us there. If you can't come out and meet us there, we'll be posting a link to an online auction to where you can still support them. Last year, Aaron and his team raised over $43,000 for Give Kids the World, a huge successful event. If you don't know about Give Kids the World, they do a lot of support for Make-A-Wish kids and critically ill families when they go to Disney. They need a place to stay. They need medical treatment. All of the things that you and I take for granted when we go to Disney, not so easy for these people. And Give Kids the World helps facilitate all of that in a wonderful charity organization. I hope to see you there at the Disney Indie Meet. Thanks for listening and have a magical day.
Ladies and gentlemen, please watch your head and step as you exit and take small children by the hand.
Aw, cheer up, Dad. You know we'll come back. With DVC.
My DVC Points is an unofficial Disney-inspired podcast created by fans of Disney Vacation Club. The thoughts expressed in this podcast are personal opinions and personal experiences. My DVC Points is not affiliated with Disney Vacation Club, the Walt Disney Companies, or any subsidiaries. We encourage listeners to contact their DVC guide or member services for official DVC policies.